And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, June 8th, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 18. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
And I'm RJ.
Welcome to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as on Facebook. You can email us, everyone, at InGameChat.net. We are currently streaming the cam feed right now through Ustream, and you can find us there or hit up our Facebook page and watch from there, as well as join the chat room live while we broadcast. We got like 8 or so people in the chat room. Hello, everybody. Not counting all the 5 guests we have in there. But hey, everybody in the chat room. Hey, everybody listening live. And soon to be everybody listening on iTunes. Which, by the way, show note, we're back on iTunes. Thank you to Jeremy Straximus for getting that done. He got us back on iTunes. We were there. You just had a convoluted way to go about subscribing to us. But now our page is actually there. So thanks to him for that. Thanks to the 2 people who have given us reviews so far and given good reviews for us so far. Thank you for that. Because our reviews were just old as dirt. So appreciate it. On to the show. We're a little more than a day away from E3. I'm about 24 hours away from hopping, or no, I'm about 12 hours away from hopping a flight to witness the madness myself. You have, you're going to have 2 very different shows, this one and the next one, for next week. You know, these are going to be 2 very different. To this show, it's going to have some of the stuff that we know, but not all of the stuff that we will know. Next week's episode is just going to be packed. We were talking about it before. I know we're only on here 2 hours live, but we may be going longer than that, likely going longer than that next week. But it'll be full of facts, probably have a lot more questions that we need answered as well, as usual per E3. But regardless, this week Microsoft lifted the lid on what its console will do, won't do, and will allow you to do, and that is going to be our first segment for tonight.
That's an interesting choice of idiom, as a matter of fact, because I feel more like they put the lid on.
Very true.
Yeah. I feel like the water was at a boil, to kind of drag it out a little bit further, and they just decided that, you know what, this is us controlling the message. Because the message has been out of control for 2 weeks now. They haven't had their hands on what they want to say, or no two of them have been able to agree
Correct.
On what it is they should be saying.
It's been a circus as far as and how that's been going.
Right. It felt... what I felt was a lot of last-minute behind-the-scenes revision, probably not on the broad policies, but on maybe some of the fine details, on which bullet points were going to be included, exactly how they would be worded, how broad the scope would be, maybe which parts of the things they've agreed to we're going to talk about now, which parts are going to be talked about later. That's mm-hmm. what I felt was going on. And then, clang, on goes the lid. I did not feel that they opened up anything at all. There were a couple of things that they reiterated. It wasn't speculation now, really, was it? Most of what we found out, and we are referring here to some of the privacy concerns regarding the Kinect 2.0.
I would say all 3 aspects that they laid out.
The 3 aspects that they laid out. The privacy concerns regarding the Kinect and the system's information sharing and gathering in general.
That was a timing issue, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. and it's by no means clear now. None of this actually is clear, but maybe that least of all. Second, and possibly the biggest was the licensing.
The licensing one. There was the Wired one, and I don't mean that in the publication. I mean it was called, you know, it was it's not called, the name of the thing is called The Wire. It was called Connected, Privacy, and Licenses. Those were the 3 points that they made.
The branded points.
Yes, exactly. And so, yes.
And this has been the bulk of the confusion. This has been the big question mark, or the vast empty space where you would have expected real information to go ever since the 21st of last month. And this is the thing that they spent that first week so embattled over. And it is because for all the work that they put into their presentation, right? And let's think back a moment to what that presentation was. We've traveled a lot of miles since then in a short amount of time. It was a very well orchestrated piece of theater. You've heard us say that before. We've been saying it a very long time about marketing and the delivery of a message. But what became very clear is that beyond the scope of the presentation and the script, Microsoft had very little understanding at the executive level of what they needed to be saying. The message may have been there behind the scenes, but the communication was almost entirely absent. That's why you had, in the hours immediately following the presentation, it was just Phil Harrison, right? Who had let loose a lot of what turned out
right.
to be actual
he seemed to
fact.
Be the he seemed to be the, right. the leaky faucet during that whole situation.
Well, and it seemed very clear that he maybe didn't even know that he wasn't supposed to be saying it. Clearly someone else, I mean, these are the facts. Yes, everyone's going to agree with mm-hmm. it when pressed on the issue. But within hours, and then furthermore, day after day, you saw people confusing the issue or contradicting themselves or running into wildly different points as if they all hadn't decided or they were making it up as they went along. It was entirely the wrong thing you want to do. When you're dealing with a business that is worth this much money and that can go so very wrong. I mean, Microsoft's got plenty of money. They can backfill any terrible hole with cash dollars, but they don't want to. Just because they've got it doesn't mean they're free to spend it. And the message has an awful lot to do with how well this thing is going to work when it, you know, when they try to sell it to people who just want to play video games, right? And that's all anybody really, really wants to do is play video games. Whether you are the much maligned dude bro gamer or whether you are a hardcore of some stripe or variation or whatever, all you really want to do is play your video games. They can pitch TV all they want to, but it's about video games. And they're, I suppose, I imagine in some way trying to make it more about the video games, but it's still problematic, largely because not because of the privacy section and not because of the connection or the what were the three?
Licenses, the privacy, and the connection.
And connection. You know. Okay, privacy and connection, those are real issues. We'll talk about them more later. They are not the thing that matters. The heart is the licensing. Mm-hmm. And that has everything to do with what you can expect to do with your licensed software, with your software license that you are free to play with within the confines of the end user license agreement. And I do not misunderstand what I'm about to say, but I find it difficult to empathize with a lot of people who are having trouble after this announcement, right? If you're not happy with Microsoft, that is perfectly fine. I am with you on that. They haven't done anything so far to make me happy about their system. A lot is left to be said, but I'm not saying I don't sympathize either. I'm being very clear between sympathy and empathy. I have been playing on the PC almost exclusively for a while now. I don't want to say almost exclusively, but doing it so much that it really shapes my perspective, right? I mean, you have been a PC gamer before, RJ, yes? At least to some extent.
Briefly, but I have played on the PC before.
Right, but it's been since this modern kind of iteration of how games are delivered on the PC, you know? It was back, last thing we played together was City of Heroes.
Yeah.
And that was when it was in its first year, so mm-hmm. 2004, 2005, right? So it's been a real age. It's been longer than the current console generation. So your experience, your personal experience with the modern era of video gaming is entirely shaped by what it's like to own a console and play on consoles. And there are things that we had to adjust to on the PC that we were given an opportunity to adjust to over a long period of time. And we came to an agreement with the people who publish and distribute games. You sell them to me in any number of 100 places with endless discounts, many different sales, lots of added value, all of these different things, and I basically forget that I used to believe the game was my own tangible property to do with as I please. And the law is unsettled on the matter, but a lot of opinions are settled. A lot of people have lived in the firm belief because of the ridiculous growth of the used game market and the amazing cost of new games that is their thing. I bought a game, right? Imagine, again, just for a second, Scott, you're a PC gamer as well. You've come to the mm-hmm. same agreement that I have. I'm not torn up about it. But imagine that you're not.
Right.
There are a lot of people out there, a lot of people who listen to our show, a lot of people who actually do go to the hardcore gaming forums, but way, way more who don't. Who just, they just play their consoles. It's something that's supposed to be fun and kind of, you know, energizing and just, it's not just a toy, but it's a good time, however you want to look at it. They don't really think beyond their own experience because there's really no need to. They may hear stories about what the PC gamers are, you know, that they know say, but they don't, you know, you don't know it down in your guts, down where you keep your wallet. You don't know what it means to move into a place where you don't get to trade your games in for credit, or you mm-hmm. don't get to just sell them to whoever on Craigslist or Half.com or an Amazon seller page or on eBay. We haven't done that in a very, very long time. They've been doing that right up until now. Still doing it, as a matter of fact. And they've just been told, effectively, nah, it's over with.
Yeah.
Now it's done because of this. And it's a shock. It's a huge, huge system shock to them because it happens all at once. It's super abrupt. Bam. Over and done with. We, Microsoft, have created a mechanism by which publishers can determine completely what you are allowed to do with your game. We have created a system where you can play your library on someone else's system. You can give your game, gift it this one time, apparently, to another person who's been on your friends list for a minimum of 30 days, by the way, which sort of eliminates the idea of it just being, you know, kind of an open, broad market. You know, mm-hmm. want to buy, want to sell kind of stuff, and those two people meet up and agree on a price. That's not really going to happen. They have enabled publishers, and the language is very specific. They have enabled publishers to allow you to trade the game between yourself and another friend. They have enabled publishers to allow you to trade your games in to participating retailers. Like, they are not requiring them to do it. They have made it possible for them to be benevolent if they feel like it or something, right? Like, they're being so completely magnanimous and trying to stay very far away from the issue, but Microsoft has created the situation. They could have just said, they could have closed it down entirely. They could have said that you're free to do whatever you want. But what they've done is they've created something and handed the keys over to the publishers. And we're supposed to look to them now to see what's entirely possible. And if I were someone who had only ever played on the consoles, I probably would be way more invested in used games than I am. As a matter of fact, I'm not at all.
Yeah. No, same here. Yeah.
I rent, you know.
Yeah, the rental side of things.
I rent a fair amount, but if rentals disappeared, it wouldn't cause me enough grief. I'm already able to get so much at such a good price on the PC that the console exclusive stuff, I would whine about it a little bit, and I would probably play fewer overall, but then just go buy one.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the point being, it doesn't hurt me so much that I can say I feel your pain, right, RJ? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm assuming at some point in the near future, near-ish future anyway, you're going to have one of these new consoles.
Yeah, I mean, but disappoints me the rental aspect especially. I won't be able to have. There's one tried true method with the try before you buy.
Yes.
Method is going to be real difficult to do nowadays with the new product.
Well,
new product coming
and it
out.
May be, and they mentioned that specifically. Yes.
For the rental thing,
yes.
My point was going to be that, you know, he's a Sony guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't necessarily know what we don't know what Sony is doing in that regard. So don't feel
like
bad too yet.
Mm-hmm.
Or don't feel too bad yet. What was that? don't feel too bad yet about that because we don't know.
Yeah, there's still a mentality of
we have every reason to
written in stone.
Yeah, we have every reason to believe that it's probably going to be the same, but we don't know that yet. We mm-hmm. do not know. Sony's in an interesting position. We'll get to that a little bit later. But as far as what they said on the license, they don't really go over. Did they go over the rentals?
No, there were no details, but they specifically mentioned rentals and lending were things that were not going to be available at launch, but that they were still.
Oh yeah,
they were still working on what that would be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably best left untouched. It's too much speculation involved. Again, it's whatever they decide to do with these things, the core of the matter is that the disc itself, right? You're still going to be able to go to Walmart or GameStop or wherever you go, and you're going to be able to buy a plastic disc that's a game. And it may, on the surface, appear that nothing has changed. And in a way, I suppose that's kind of true. Legally, that actually is sort of true. But effectively, to you as a game-owning, console-playing individual, it's never really going to be the same again. All the disc does is get the bits on your hard drive. Every single game, every game, is going to be available digitally and on disc, day and date, at the same time. All the disc does is get it onto your system. That's it. You got download caps, or do you have some kind of coupon for a particular store or something like that? Fine. Get the plastic disc, mm-hmm. and that, you know, that's some kind of sales incentive, I suppose. But ultimately, it's all the same thing. And all you were doing is buying a license. The yeah. argument here is that what they have done by strangling or by bottlenecking the used game business, and more especially the private transaction business, me selling a game to you, is that they have taken away your rights, that they have removed something that is a right of yours to sell a thing. First sale doctrine says that I can sell something to you, and now Microsoft has made that impossible. But the unfortunate thing, and this is something that we all had to argue about on the PC years ago, is that that just ain't so. It isn't. It's dirty, and it's filthy, and it is an unfortunate side effect of judicial reasoning based on very old, century-old law that wasn't specific to begin with, and like all very old law, isn't good at dealing with the idiosyncrasies of the 21st century of data and information. And the unfortunate result, and I do mean it's very unfortunate, but it is the true result, is that as far as the courts are concerned, that right has not been taken from you. It is actually your right to sell this thing that you bought, but it is not your right to have it work perfectly.
I know.
There is nothing, and I know that this is ridiculous, and there's a lot of words been written about it, and unfortunately, as regards software, it's kind of unsettled. It's ongoing. You mm-hmm. are in the middle of what will one day lead to an ultimate decision one way or another, some kind of hard decision in law. But at the moment, you don't have a right to what you think you do, and that's really kind of bad. That the world has worked a certain way and worked quite well for some time, and that it's about to change so dramatically for other people. You can sell that disc, and you can technically, in some respect, I believe, transfer the license, but there is nothing wrong and nothing preventing the people who own it, the publisher, you know, the copyright holder, and then the trademark owner. There's nothing saying that they can't prevent it from working. And that is that's the oddest thing. It was really, really very, very strange. And it's unfortunate because now we have murky, gooey, disgusting, irrational law, you know, caked all over our good time. And that's really all it's supposed to be, is a good time. And while Microsoft, I think the point is that Microsoft is very much within the letter of the law. They are not within the spirit of the law. And I don't think that they're approaching their relationship to people correctly. And my understanding, read by other experts, is that they don't even think this issue is going to be decided in favor of consumers. Because whether you've read it or not, if you've agreed to a EULA, the courts are going to side with the EULA holder. They're going to side with the... Mm-hmm. They're not going to side with you. And that's just how it has worked, is working, and is likely to continue to work. The only weapon you have is your behavior as a consumer. Market forces are the only thing thought, even by legal experts, to be the thing that drives them away from this kind of behavior. And that's actually pretty fascinating right now, watching Microsoft make these choices, watching them like, and they're not very straightforward about it. They're very, like, they're moving around all over the place. They're giving us strange options, like, what was one of the bullet points? Supposedly, 10 members of your family can access any of your games from your library on their own account at any Xbox One. I don't know what that means. on the surface, it sounds really good. Oh, 10 people in my family. But I don't know, man. Who do they consider your family? And how are they going to decide who those 10 people are? Are they the people who all have their live accounts tethered to like the same home console? Because we do know that the console ID of your home console is going to come into play, you know, in terms of knowing like when you're considered a guest account at a place and when you're not. It's not a title by title thing. It's account and console. You know what I mean? Like it's.
So you're saying that you, who live just a couple of streets over from me, you could or could not be on my account?
We're just still
murky on that, aren't we?
No, I don't know anything about whether I can be on your account or not. They haven't even said anything about the family account, which my understanding was that the old family gold account has been discontinued.
Yeah, that's done.
So obviously in favor of some new arrangement, which they haven't talked about. And this family thing was brand new. But the rest of it, I don't know. I don't know if you should feel better or worse that it's mostly what we thought it would be. That the used game arrangement is largely what we imagined it to be. That it's in the hands of the publishers to decide when and how much, when and for how much, rather, the used game market can continue to operate.
No, and their statement here was, in our role as a games publisher, this is Microsoft talking, in our role as a games publisher, Microsoft Studios, that's our gaming studio, will enable you to give your games to friends or trade in your Xbox One games at participating retailers.
Right. Yes.
So they've already, now third, then they say third-party publishers, they can opt in or out of supporting game resale, and they can have it on their own terms, because Microsoft won't get any money from this.
Which I actually find hard to believe. Microsoft has set up an entire network, some element, some portion, some wisp of the cloud. This whole Azure network and the live server network is going to be used in part to support the authentication and deauthentication of games on any particular person's account.
It's very much so, a storefront, yes.
Regardless of publisher, regardless of his decision to participate in this program, right? Even if EA says, yes, you can trade in your copy of Battlefield 4 or whatever. I don't know. Mirror's Edge 2, say, as a single-player game.
Yeah.
At GameStop. It is Microsoft's network that's going to be handling all of this. And we still have to assume that it's going to be GameStop that's hooked into that network. GameStop and any other member of this participating retailer chain, circle thing. Right? Like, I don't know. There's still a lot of shadows and a lot of blank spots that we don't see, but there's not that many options to fill them in. Microsoft is still heavily involved in this. They didn't just wind up the mechanism and let it go, and they can't wash their hands of it. They are deep in this. They are at the bottom of this. They're as deep as anybody else, and I don't...
And remember that when they say that we'll allow you to give your games to your friends, that still falls under the rule previous of...
Right.
You can only do it once.
Right. They've created a mechanism where that's possible, but the publisher can opt out of it at any time.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine very simply on the used game decision, okay? It's not even recent anymore. It's been years. I've had to work in GameStop. You have spent a lot of time in GameStop, RJ.
Mm-hmm.
You have done business with them, less now, but more in the past. Mm-hmm. You have. You understand perfectly. Brand new whatever game comes out, it's $59.99. You buy the game. You go play it for a week. You bring it back. You get your trade-in of $25-$30. And they put it on the shelf for $5 less. The chances of that happening now are probably very slim. Not because they won't be charging just $5 less. That has worked very well for them because they've got added discounts that they'll put on top of it. But if you're the publisher of Game X, are you going to allow people to trade their games in during the first week? The first second week? Third? Mm-hmm. The first month? That's most likely what they're going to want to do. Once the sales taper off after that first month, really, that's when you start seeing the sales on the PC side, right? Games come out at full price on the PC all the time. It's a little less, you know, typical.
It is, but if you look 50. At if you look at a game like Tomb Raider, that was out maybe a month
right.
before it had a huge
discount. Anybody who needs it the first day, when there's nothing wrong with that, but if you want it the first day, you pay the premium. After about a month on the PC, you start to see bam, 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 serious drops, midweek drops, week-long specials, coupons, I mean, various things. You start to see the game offered for much cheaper. That may be something you see on the console, maybe not, but in any respect, the publisher is very likely to take that first month and say, nah, I don't think so. I don't think you're trading this in. I don't want to start populating the used game shelf with my brand new game at GameStop. That's what you're not going to do. The older titles, that was never what they had a problem with. It was the fact that the retailer would much rather you buy the one that's $5 cheaper. That's 100% profit.
Because they get 100% of the cut
right.
from that. Yeah.
That's where most of the damage was done. Not the stuff with the really long tail. They clearly don't care that much about it. That's what pre-order bonuses were for. That's what pre-orders themselves were for. That's what day one DLC was for. That's what the Project $10 was for. It was all about what was happening in those first days and weeks of the sale, because that's what matters. If it wasn't the thing that mattered most, Square Enix would not have decided Tomb Raider was a failure in week three.
Right.
It's all about that upfront stuff when you're talking about major retail releases. And that's going to be that timetable where the publishers are most likely to say, nope, there's a blackout on this stuff until you sell all the new discs that we gave you.
Well, we got to take a break, and when we come back, we'll go over to the other two points that were made for the Xbox One, the connection and the privacy issues. We're going to go over that when we come back. We may have it always happens when we go to these breaks, we think, ooh, forgot to mention this about this topic that we were on, and we'll come back.
So we'll talk about some stuff we forgot to mention.
We got more stuff. Anyway, it's all coming up next. More In-Game Chat up next. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Currently talking about Microsoft's whatever this is, their three-point program of how their machine is going to work.
Right.
Basically, it answered a lot of the questions that that everybody was having. They hadn't officially said anything about all these different ways that that it was going to have always on with the Kinect. You were always going to have to be connected to the internet to use it, and how used games and that sort of thing would work out. They finally kind of laid out that plan. Interestingly enough, just a few days before E3, we weren't really sure when we were going to get this information, how we were going to get this information, and who was going to give us that information first. Was it going to be Microsoft or Sony? And we'll kind of get into that a little bit later on. But the other two points that they made were the privacy issues, because the Kinect camera is always on and always listening, that sort of thing, and how often you were going to have to be connected to the internet for your machine to work. We finally got the details on that. Let's start with how often you have to be connected, because that's a concern for a lot of people. However, also for a lot of people, I actually don't think it is a concern. I'm always connected. It is always connected there. I feel weird. I what was I doing the other day? Oh, I had a trip, and I didn't have LTE on my phone. I was down to 4G, and as soon as I got back into LTE, it felt like this thing could breathe again. Right. You know, because I was just going so slow or whatever. It's just
you're
one of those things.
It's your phone, by the way, not any other thing.
Yeah, it's
it was your phone, right?
Yeah, my phone. My phone. But yeah, it's. I'm always connected, always try to be connected. When I'm not, I'm almost miserable.
There are the interesting thing about this isn't, and I really was trying to make an honest point last segment. I am not assuming that I buy an Xbox One. At the moment, I'm not interested. But there's any number of things they could do over the next 5 days that could convince me, and certainly the next 5 months. But let's just say I do. most of what they've said here does not directly affect me. And that means that I don't have such a strong emotional response to it. And I know a lot of people are like this. This is probably where a lot of the disagreement between actual humans comes in and why people get in fights over it. Some people are more directly affected than others, and it can be an effort to step outside of yourself and say, okay, I really need to think about what this means at a macro level, like on a large scale, or for other groups of people. This is the first time that the basic operation of the console simply prohibits certain people from owning it and playing it. There are people who just do not have internet, have broadband internet, as a matter of fact. They specifically mentioned you need broadband. They said whatever it is that we consider to be broadband here in the States, I think 1.5 megabit down is our threshold for broadband in the States, but cable or DSL or something like that. Cable or DSL. Who doesn't have that, right? Well, the people who don't have it. A non-zero number of people, that's for certain. And there's going to be a lot of people, for various reasons, who simply can't have it. And that number is probably... it probably includes more people than you think. And that's... I mean, that's... that's worth considering, that they simply have decided they don't want to do business with those people. Leaving them by the wayside is worth it for whatever they gain by having greater control over the sale and redistribution of games. That's not wonderful, you know? It's not wonderful for people who just, again, have made their favorite hobby, their very best good time is playing games, and all they want to do is look at where that's going, what are the next best things I can play, and they're going to find out that they can't participate. That's worth being upset over, because it's Microsoft making a very a very obtuse and cynical decision. And yeah, I don't think that's particularly good. So even though you only have to check in every, 24 hours, once a day, mm-hmm. You got to do one check-in a day in order to make sure that everything on your account is... legitimate, that there have been no changes or anything like that.
You can game offline for up to 24 hours on your primary console, or 1 hour if you are logged onto a separate console accessing your library. Offline gaming is not possible after these prescribed times until you re-establish a connection. Oh, but you can still watch live TV and enjoy Blu-ray and DVD movies.
Yeah, because I've got a cable box, and because your system is doing nothing but acting as a pass-through anyway. Mm-hmm. So, whatever. I don't think that's a particularly good clause. I don't think it's a good strategy for them.
Now, over to the privacy then. You want to look at that?
Yeah. Again, not terribly concerned about it.
But. Right. They say that you are in control of what the Kinect can see and hear. You will determine how responsive it is, how it picks up, what it responds to, and the voices that it needs to detect, and that sort of stuff. It seems that you can customize this thing to your liking, how sensitive it is, all that sort of stuff, down to the point of not using it, from what I understand.
See,
but
here's the thing that I don't know is, if you look back at what they were trying to clarify the week of the 21st, one of the things they were saying is, oh, it's always plugged in, it's always listening, even if you choose not to use it. They can say that I feel like when they tell me I can change how responsive the Kinect is, that I can tell the Kinect to ignore what I say. Not necessarily that I can plug its ears.
Right.
And blind it. I want to blind it and deafen it. I want to unplug it. I want it to not be a part of the system's operation. But the sense that I get, and it stays with me every time they try to clarify it, is that I may have some control over how it responds to me or whether it ignores a certain piece of input, but I cannot simply, gouge out its eyes and muffle its ears. I can't do that. And I think that's the thing people are most suspicious of. Whether it responds or not, if it is listening, that's still something to be worried about, right?
Yeah. You don't know what's going out there. because the information is so free flowing out there when it's coming out. You just have a lack of control of what's being monitored or listened to.
And they haven't haven't presented us with any. If this thing truly can be essentially ignored as an input device, they haven't really shown us how. I mean, I understand the controller. I'm not entirely stupid, but they haven't showcased at all how managing those things is going to work. Is there any sort of controller input for switching operating environments from the game to the media interface, for example? Right? What are the various options on the front end, on the hard controller, you know, button mashing end to bring up the snap screen?
Right.
Or to jump straight to any of these different things. They didn't showcase it, and for good reason, because that's not what they're trying to sell. But if this is true about the Kinect, then how is that other stuff going to work? You know, whatever. Maybe they can talk about that on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or whenever. I don't really care. It's just worth noting that even though they have presented us with something, I guess, more than an outline of their plan, with their kind of objectives for how you can use this thing and what the details are, what the restrictions are, it's still overbroad. This is a fairly complicated device with an extremely complicated, you know, use case surrounding it that's still mostly full of holes. It's mostly unknowns. They're going to have to do a lot of talking and a lot of showing to make it clear. So,
They're not going to be doing a lot of talking to the press. Just before they came out with these three things.
This was on, like, well, they came out with this on Thursday. So we're talking about, like, Wednesday or something when we started hearing
it. It was around Wednesday. We started hearing them. People mentioning that the round table got canceled.
There was a press event to be held before the conference, and then a round table afterward.
Mm-hmm.
And those were canceled.
Yeah, the round table afterwards were canceled. They were going to meet with press and just have a nice little whatever round table discussion.
Well, and the round table discussion is an opportunity, and different people in the media feel differently about these round tables because different people get different things out of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the roundtable is sometimes an opportunity for the press to clarify things that the presentation may not have covered. Like if they had skipped over a particular issue, they want to make sure, you know, readers of my publication are going to wonder why you didn't talk about this detail. And it gives them a second shot at the item in question, right? And it kind of puts Microsoft in a position, puts the host of the roundtable in a position of clarifying, obfuscating, or ignoring. And that, you know, that's a kind of detail and a kind of information. And it also allows them a somewhat more relaxed atmosphere to give a more sort of a comfortable and sort of, you know, a less, something less of a sales pitch and more of a discussion about what it is.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of different things you can learn from them, but they can be adversarial. They can be uncomfortable. They can also be like really fun and revealing. But when you create that kind of situation, you are that much less in control of the message. And so that's why people were suspicious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, their reasoning was they were just scheduling conflicts. We can't do this. And I thought,
That happens a lot.
You've got a brand new console you're releasing. Yeah. I can understand that there's conflicts going on. Whatever the case, I'll allow you that. That's fine.
It can be very difficult to, even for a nobody, to make all of their scheduled meetings and to be in all of the pre-agreed places at mm-hmm. the agreed upon times at a place like E3. E3 is nuts.
Yeah.
So, okay, if you say so. Scheduling conflicts,
right.
Sure.
Yeah, my first impression was that they were just trying to avoid the possibility of causing more confusion.
Well, sure, that was everybody's first impression, and that's because it's what's happening, actually. Scheduling conflicts is a fig leaf, you know? It's a smokescreen. It's just that they're real sometimes, you know? And so the possibility that it could be the case...
How convenient.
Quite. But they followed that up with the apparent cancellation of one-on-one interviews.
Yeah, they started canceling the one-on-one interviews with members of the press.
Not all of them.
Select members of the press, not all of them. So, like, members of the press that you wouldn't necessarily think that they would be doing that to.
They did it to Giant Bomb, GI.biz, is that right?
Yeah.
GamesIndustry.biz. A couple other MCV, mm-hmm. I think, and a handful of others. And again, scheduling conflicts can be a legitimate reason for that. They really, really, really can. On both ends, by the way. Media as well as the companies. But, you know, back to back, a lot of those rumors and a lot of cancellations, and that immediately followed by what we talked about the last two segments.
Right.
They don't want to talk about this with people. They don't want any gotcha journalism. They don't actually, they just don't want any hard questions, unfortunately, or they want a minimum of hard questions. By no means, I'm not trying to defend them here. They have a lot to answer for, and really clarity, right? Like the antiseptic quality of sunlight would go a long way if they would just spill it all out there and just tell us what it is, right? Just lay it all out and let people be angry about it or not angry about it and let them start dealing with what the reality is. But they had so much trouble in the week of the 21st after their announcement because none of the executives could get the message right. They couldn't agree with each other, and they created way more confusion. They did way more harm than good by an enormous amount. I'm not sure they did any good. So for them to just say, look, you guys in suits obviously can't handle the pressure of being put under the gaze of someone who knows how to ask questions. So we're going to limit their access. It's that simple. We've got to stay on message. We've got to control it. It's the right thing to do from the point of view of a company who has a thing to, you know, to handle, a message to handle, a product to sell, a lie to deliver, if you want to be that way about it, which I kind of do.
Well, in the chat room right now, Blind Man Raves just said, has Sony said anything? Are they content to let Microsoft
play the canary in the mine?
Right. This brings up an interesting question, because this is something you and I talked about immediately after we saw this. You and I were in G-Chat hitting it up saying, well, I guess what we're going to talk about. And then we just talked about the timing of this. Then we said, well, you know, the ball's back in Sony's court now.
It is, but they're taking time lining up their shot.
I know.
They have said almost nothing. They have been very, very careful with their message. I think it is extremely likely that something like what Microsoft is doing is going to be present with Sony as well. The one thing that they have said is that the PS4 is going to play used games, or we will not restrict the PS4 from playing used mm-hmm. games. And they have indicated that they will do something similar to what Microsoft has done. Maybe less restrictive overall, but that they are going to give some control to the publishers.
And as I understand it, and I've seen this come up a couple of times, they've also said kind of point blank that you do not need to be connected.
You are right. They have said that point blank.
Right.
You do not need to be connected to the internet, which is a pretty good piece of information, but you combine that with what they've indicated about the publishers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be connected to play, but the publishers will have some control over the fate of their titles. There are a limited number of ways both of those things can be true. Interesting ways. Very, very interesting ways. And I think much like all of the other philosophies behind these two companies, they're going to be trying to do similar things, but in entirely different ways. You know, they're approaching the market from very, very different ways.
But this sort of does this put the ball in Sony's court to say that, well, now we have to use our E3 presentation to detail this sort of thing, or is this something they can still detail after it's over?
No, they have to talk about it. They have to talk about it on Monday.
Yeah.
Everybody has been giving them, I don't want to say the benefit of the doubt, but they have just been waiting. Microsoft has been busy getting tongue-tied and being contradictory. Sony has just been staying quiet, which has, up to now, I think, been the right thing to do. But they have got to talk about it on Monday. I would argue that Microsoft needs to talk more about it on Monday. It's hardly clear.
Right.
But I don't think they want to. I think they can, I think they want to maybe wash away some of the doubt by just trying to really blow people out of the water with talk of games. And that's great. It's not going to be enough. They just have a lot of stuff to explain. I believe Sony needs to take one opportunity to have a very clear message. No competing interests, no contradictory points of view from different executives. Get out there, tell it like it is, do it all in one go, make it clear, give us a price, do the whole thing, do the entire thing. talk a little bit about games, but you don't have to be 100% about it when you're not busy cleaning up behind yourself. And they're not. For whatever else they may not have done, they haven't left a mess. So they are free to do, they're free to talk about whatever they want, but they need to answer the same questions Microsoft has been asked to answer now for a while. They're not off the hook for it.
Yeah. And they've still got to reveal their console.
Which is fine. That's minutes. That's minutes.
I know. I understand. I'm just saying that there's a few things that you are definitely going to have. And that's one of those. The things that are still up in the air will be price, release date, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. We'll talk about price a little bit, I suppose, in the next hour. Because there's some interesting further speculation.
There is. And we'll have that coming up in the next hour. But we're going to go to our top of the hour break here. And then when we come back, we will have the second hour of In-Game Chat. We will be right back. To In-Game Chat. I forgot to do music. That was City of Heroes from the last break that we took, and this is Halo.
Which Halo?
It only says Halo.
Oh.
I only have Halo written up there, so I'm not exactly sure.
This is sad. This is how you should feel after you read all of those things about the Xbox One. This music is how, this is the sound your heart makes. When you hear about how things are going to work.
Well, then what sound does your heart make when you hear about Sony?
Well, currently,
because we just spent an hour talking about Microsoft.
Because I don't know anything, because I have the luxury for the next really 48 hours of being in a purely optimistic state, right? And I can, if it turns out to be a fiction, so be it, because our motto is you must always manage your own expectations, and we cannot run away with how much we want the Sony thing to work out in our favor, because it may not. However, at the moment, I'm in love with the idea of the PS4, and my heart sounds like the music from the Golden Saucer in Final Fantasy VII. Neither of you two know what I'm talking about.
Nope.
But somebody does. They know.
Dennis is in the chat room. Yeah. He knows exactly what you're talking about.
It makes that happy carnival organ music in my heart for the PS4.
That's a Sony game anyway.
The moment. It's a Squaresoft game.
It's Squaresoft, I know, but it was on the PlayStation, correct?
Yeah, man, but it doesn't matter.
That's how much I know. I know things.
I know a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, man, when you do a show like this, when you, anybody out there that has their own show like this, whether it's great or not or whatever, you don't really want to get stuck in the same trap every week. But at this time of year, you really have no choice. A week goes by and you think, maybe now I could talk about EA this week, right? We can talk about something different.
Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't happen because EA likes to make news, and for the past several weeks it's been Microsoft, so.
Exactly.
Sony's been very, very quiet, so there's not an awful lot to say, but there have been a lot of indirect pieces of information about what the PS4 is going to be.
A little bit of news over here, a little bit of news over there, things that you can gather from them, and then, some points that are to be made, little blurbs here and there that you might get out of it. The two things we mentioned before was that they will play used games.
So will the Xbox.
And so will the Xbox.
If we're going to be that...
I know.
If we're going to be that miserly with our information, let's be clear, they're same is true on the other system.
Yeah, and the connection issue, those sort of things. What we have gathered, and I'm guessing this is where you wanted me to go with this, was that the free to play.
Yeah, I mean, that's out there, and I makes me really, really happy, right? There's a lot to be said about free to play stuff, and I have, if you've been with us for a while, or if you want to go back and listen to a bunch of old shows, I have eaten much as the crow that I have had to eat about things like indie games and about free to play games and stuff like this, because I have doubted them significantly in the past, and have been very, very wrong about them. I've been right in certain respects, but in the broad strokes, actually was very wrong. And if you're a PC gamer right now, if you, you know, if you built a PC, if you had your $700-$800 and built yourself a modest but decent little gaming rig, you could sink that money into your rig and not worry for months and months about paying actual money to buy a game. Certainly not paying full price to buy a single game, which may last you whatever amount of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's obviously the Skyrims and the Fallouts and things like that where you get a lot of bang for your buck, but the free-to-play market has grown so fast and is of such... The average quality of the free-to-play market is so high now that there are a lot of things that are really worth your time and worth chipping in a few bucks here and there for resource packs or XP advancements or whatever you want to do. But whether you like shooters or MMOs or whatever, I mean, I wouldn't say that your offerings are quite as good. You know, you're not going to find a free-to-play Final Fantasy single-player RPG necessarily. But the point being, there's an enormous amount of time out there available for you. Play time, actually playing in a game for nothing, for the cost of downloading it, which is nothing. And we kind of take it for granted here on the PC. It's so easy, and it's now, you know, for the past year and a half or so, I guess, been so good and so available that we're like, whatever, you know, like this is just how it is. And some of them I play, some of them I don't. Mm-hmm. But when I think, not about people who own both consoles and have a gaming PC, not about people who just play a little bit, but about guys who just play on the consoles, not only have they missed kind of the explosion of the digital delivery, I mean, they've got some of it over there, right? The PSN Store and Xbox Live Arcade have done some things, but most significantly, they've missed the free-to-play revolution. They haven't had any access to it whatsoever. And I have seen no evidence that Microsoft is going to be supporting that kind of gameplay at all. I mean, they are absolutely committed to live working the way that it works now, only more so. But in the past week, I mean, we've had suspicions about this, but in the past week, we've had confirmation of four different significant free-to-play games that are currently out and available on the PC that will be coming to the PS4. A few weeks ago, we knew about...
Warfighter? Warfighter, yeah. I think, is what it's called.
Which is an open beta on the PC right now. But that is going to be coming to the
War
PS4.
Thunder.
War Thunder.
There's two of them. There's two war...
There's Warframe.
There's Warframe.
Warframe we learned about, which is a free-to-play co-op PC thing that's out now. Two of Sony's own properties from Sony Online Entertainment, PlanetSide 2, which is huge. Like, it's a huge deal. It's not only a huge game, literally, it is a huge deal that they're bringing that over. It was obvious. It's one of their own properties, but it does right what so many other people are actually trying to do in the future, and it's already doing it. Massive, massive open world online battles with strategy, you know, various tactical engagements, first-person shooter stuff, vehicles. It's, you know, like a somewhat futuristic battlefield for anybody that doesn't have any experience with it whatsoever. It takes a fairly beefy rig to run on the PC side, to run well at least. Mm-hmm. So having access to that, if you are someone who is strictly a sit down in front of the TV console gamer, that's a big deal. It's that style of gameplay that a lot of people like, but at a scale and a price that they haven't had access to so far. Like that's going to matter. It may not even make much sense right now, today, but it is going to matter to them if what do we say? War Thunder, Warframe, PlanetSide 2, DC Universe Online.
Yeah, that's
which
their
is
other
another
Sony.
One. Now, that was already on PS3, mm-hmm. but the fact that it actually is going to be maintained across console generations and likely improved significantly is a really, really big deal. Blacklight Retribution, which I don't know. I know you haven't played it, RJ, because you don't have a box. Did you ever?
I have not, no.
You haven't been much of a competitive shooter guy, though, ever. It's really, really, really quite good. It's very, very fast. It looks fantastic. It plays brilliantly. I'm not a fan of how they've kind of monetized their weapons. And I don't like their UI and things like that, but the actual gameplay is really, 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 really good. It's really fast. It's really solid. It'll be a perfect match for online gameplay for the shooter fans on consoles. And it's an excellent thing to see brought to market. But that's like five things right there. And I'm going to assume, since all five of them are out and have been out for some time on the PC, that there's a great chance that all of them could be there at launch for the PS4. So just those five, right? Before E3, before any official announcements, before any kind of before Sony bothers to elaborate on free-to-play games on the PC, you're looking at five things that could potentially be out day one. Mm-hmm. So you throw down the money for the PS4, whatever that money is, take it home, plug it into the internet, and already you've got five really, really good games that you can be playing without spending a dime. Like, that's
at least, I mean, who knows what else they're going to be announcing.
Who knows what else they could announce? And that is assuming that they'd be out at launch. But if that's the case, you don't have to live in that weird space where there's only the way it is when a new console comes out. Like, there's like 12 or 14 like really good game, or 12 or 14 games rather, one or two of which may be really good, and I already like threw down the hundreds for the console, so I can really only afford this other thing. There's no backwards compatibility this time around, so you're not going to just be enjoying the delicate beauty of your new console while you play old games on it. Like, none of that is true. You've got to have something available right away. And if what we've learned up to now is true, Microsoft doesn't have anything to match that. Nothing at all. And that is a huge deal for people who aren't made of money, to always have the option to go back to something and say, it's free. All you got to do is download it and log in.
But it's also, you know, we talked about this, you and I, a couple of weeks back when we were talking about these systems. SKU releases.
The possibility of different SKUs.
The possibility of different SKUs, and then the inability to find just the system for sale.
Yes. Because the retailers like to package their custom SKUs.
They like to take whatever that price is that's announced, and then add
on
another,
a second controller.
Yeah, they like to add on another $100 at the
worth
minimum.
Of stuff.
Yeah,
so that they're getting a little something out of it on that day. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw that. Although, well, no, it doesn't help them much with online points and stuff like that. They all sell it for whatever reason, so that's probably something they're going to wind up doing a lot more business in. But I don't know. I don't know entirely what to say about that. But the fact that there's so many free-to-play things coming, really, really good just for anybody who's looking to buy a console and wants plenty of things available. Also really good because of what it indicates. Not about anything that's said directly, but about what we can learn about how things are done over there, the nature of the business on Sony's side of things, the nature of that relationship. You may remember that there was that somewhat damning story about how Microsoft isn't going to allow self-publishing with indie stuff.
And
a lot of people kind of grabbed onto that story and whipped it around and made it sound like there weren't going to be indie games on the Xbox. And that was never true. It meant specifically what it said. You're not going to be allowed to self-publish. Publishing relationships are governed very specifically on the Microsoft console, and if you don't come bearing your own publisher, like if you have to work with Microsoft, then you're going to wind up in what is, if you listen to any number of people who have talked about it, unpleasant dealings and possibly downright hostile arrangement. Sony seems to be taking a very, very different tack, and one of the things I thought was interesting was ran across some discussion online about specifically about Blacklight showing up on PS4, and the arrangement seems to be that on the PC, that game is actually managed by a different company. Perfect World,
yeah,
I think they manage a number of free-to-play games. That's what you find on the PC. You got an independent developer that makes the game, and then another company that actually has the front end, manages the store, sets up the store, that sort of stuff. It's a decent arrangement, but that means they have some effect on distribution and timing and pricing and things like that that may or may not be working out good for you or the customer. But my understanding is that on the PS4, Zombie, who are the guys who make Blacklight Retribution, are going to be able to do that on their own. They have full control, full complete control. And that's probably partly because of the money they've made on the PC, but it's... I can't help but feel refreshed by that. On a console, right? Like the most notoriously closed platforms in the world,
right?
Open relationships are happening. They're either allowing complete self-publishing, or they're using Sony's, what is it called? The
Pub Fund.
Pub Fund, right.
Yeah.
Which is like a little bit of a royalty matching type thing, where they give you a little bit of money up front and say, look, you make your game exclusive to our platform for a fixed amount of time. We'll give you, you know, some hundreds of thousands of dollars to help you bring this game to our platform, and then you give us a little back from your royalties to repay the loan. But it's apparently something that works really well for them, and they still maintain almost complete control over their product. Like, that's... We talk a lot right now about anti-consumer behavior, or how much we would like to see pro-consumer behavior, but specifically anti-consumer behavior from someone like Microsoft. And in my experience, and this is just what I've observed, it's just as bad anti-developer behavior, if that makes any sense. A really good pro-developer relationship is going to by nature be fairly pro-consumer as well. They're going to be really positive for the working environment and the rights and the control and the creativity of the guys making the games. You can bet that they're most likely going to be interested in giving you the best arrangement as a customer. I don't know that there's any causation there, but those things seem to correlate with each other an awful lot. And I'm really excited to have seen these things happening on the PS4, or at least they seem to be happening on the PS4, because makes me realize that a lot of the things I love, a lot of the things that we are so snobbish about on the PC, will probably stop being exclusive to the PC. You know? No more of this bloody peasant talk about the poor console slobs. They're actually going to get something that they very much deserve as gamers, which is the ability to access lots of different types of gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Much better relationships with the indies. Much more control over price from the people who are actually making and distributing the games, you know?
Yeah, it's...
And there's a lot of really good stuff out there already that I would really like to see show up on the PS4. Things that have been very, very successful and very fun on the PC.
You played one of those, I think.
I've played a number of them. So...
It is interesting to look at this. If I already know how it is, but if I had the time, I'd love to go back and look at. I'd love to actually sit through and watch the 360's reveal again and the PS3's reveal again and see.
Four.
Just.
Oh no! Are you actually talking about the old 2000?
Yeah.
Six reveal.
Yeah.
Okay.
All that stuff. Just to go and see how different it all is now. You know, how that amount of time had to go by for them to, for Sony to kind of, it's really interesting just to see Sony take this complete turn in the way that they're dealing with this. And to kind of see where it's coming, you know, Microsoft got this and Xbox Live Arcade and they've got the indie stuff. And then you started hearing how bad it was to put your indie game on Xbox Live. You wanted it there because of the exposure, but the problems that came with it sometimes were too much to deal with. And now Sony is, you know, just, we've talked about this before, just how the cycle goes. And it's just interesting to see that take place.
Third console is a curse. There's a complete curse to your third console launch, apparently.
Very true. Wow.
N64?
Right.
Xbone? Yeah. PS3?
Exactly.
Right?
Your third
Again, console. it's heavily correlated. I don't want to get superstitious or anything, but, you know, someone needs to, like, I don't know, roll some chicken bones or something and, like, blow some magic smoke over some runes or something. I don't know.
Naveed in the chat rooms here says, has anyone tried Gunpoint, by the way?
Ah, yes, I have. Things. Quit getting ahead of me there.
Oh, man. Well, where do you want to go? We've still got 6 minutes in this segment left.
No. I actually think I can do 6 minutes on Gunpoint. which I hadn't even paid attention to from even way back when it was doing its Kickstarter stuff.
I didn't even know it did a Kickstarter, and I hate that I missed out on the Kickstarter. All I saw was a Rock Paper Shotgun did a thing on it and was saying that this guy's, you know, doing this whole situation, and it's a good game, and he's let me, you know, hit him up for an email and see if he can get a code out of it and play it, and not free. This was way back in development.
Yeah,
when he was doing this, and I tried to get in touch with him to get the game, and never heard back about it. So, but it was still on my radar. Every time it was coming back up with these things, it was still on my radar, and it finally got released, and you got a chance to play it.
Yeah, so. I have a terrible, terrible blind spot where a lot of indie games are concerned. I just, it's old, and you know, when I'm old, and I have this weird, crusty bias to certain things, and I just can't see them. I don't have time enough to be interested in all the things in the world. That's why I rely on all of the different places on the internet and all of my various people to smack me around and realign my vision and point me at things that matter. And it still doesn't work sometimes because I'm old and stubborn. And so I just hadn't paid attention to it. I was like, whatever, nothing, right? Whatever, it looks like fun and I hate fun or something. I don't know. And I just, somehow I just missed it. But things get released and people talk about them, and things that I can actually have right now for $9 of my dollars sort of excite me. And I had paid a little bit of attention to it, but whatever. Here's this thing. And you know what it did to me? Like, I watched like seconds of something. And maybe this was like a whole thing that he was thinking. Maybe it's been talked about to death somewhere else. I don't know. I didn't run across any of that talk. It absolutely tickled me in my elevator action spot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I loved that game. That might be a top 10 game for me. Probably not top 10, but very close. I love me some elevator action. So if elevator action was elevator puzzle, elevator problem solving, I don't know what, right? Anything other than necessarily action. It is absolutely elevator action as a puzzle game. And it's really, really a lot of fun. It's a terrific amount of fun. Absolutely worth the less money than you would spend at a movie theater.
Yeah.
I beat it, and I almost beat it without firing a bullet.
Wow.
I almost, you don't even get a, you gotta buy a gun later. You're not even supposed to go around shooting stuff, right?
Because it's called gunpoint.
Well, that's sort of the joke. There's even a whole bunch of, it's like an achievement that explains how ridiculous that is. But, I mean, you can do it if you don't really care. But if you're trying to gentleman ghost your way through everything, well, then you obviously can't be going around firing bullets. But I screwed up on the last dude, and I clicked a thing when I shouldn't have clicked it, and I didn't have enough batteries, and I'm a bit of a boob where paying attention comes. So I had to fire a bullet to finish things off. But it was really, really a lot of fun. It's got a level creator in it.
Nice.
I mean, you can spend the $9 and get just the basic thing that comes with the game, and you know, all the game parts to it and everything. And it's not over hard. There's a small amount of timing and reflex stuff involved. There's a moderate amount of having to think your way through the hacking of different circuit and switch arrangements in the thing. If you just want to bowl your way through the entire game, it's not especially difficult. But I don't think that's really where the fun is at all. The difficulty is in trying to do it without being spotted, without making noise, and without hurting anybody at all. So, I did get an achievement for punching a guy like 200 times. So, that's really... He told me there wasn't an achievement, but I checked him, and there it is. There it is. So, you know, again, $9?
Now, you mentioned elevator action, so was this a 2D, 2D side-scroller?
Yeah, it's like a 2D side-scroller where you're playing an investigator.
Right.
And there's, like, kind of a fairly twisted, recursive little story that you're involved in about a murder involving someone who works at an arms company. And so you wind up working for competing interests in this little story, and it's all handled in like fun little text arrangements, which are really, really neat. And when you actually go into the levels, it's about having to get to a place and hack a thing and just push a button and do a use thing. But it's all about using different elements of the environment to get around the environment, get past locked doors, to make it past traps, make it past vaults, and all the while confounding and avoiding the various guards, cops, and patrols and agents and stuff that are in these structures. And it is no more complicated than it needs to be. It is absolutely only what it needs to be. And it is kind of gleeful in that, you know? It's not overly complicated. Nothing. It never takes more than two lines to explain how to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And it is plenty of fun to realize how quickly you can fail after you think that you have devised the perfect plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oops, that was a window and he could see me, kind of thing. So it's good. It's very, very good. Mm-hmm. And you can have, like I said, you can have $9 just for the basic version, but he offers several different versions. He offers like some kind of primo pack or something that has a... I think of this because you were specifically mentioning wanting to look at it back during development. And there is one of the more expensive, like $30 packs or something, gives you the ability to play 9 different snapshot versions of the game
at different
positions in its
neat.
Development.
Yeah.
Which I kind of actually, now that I played it, enjoy, sort of regret that I didn't get that version,
because
that would be really, really nice. Although now I really want to start playing other people's levels, because it's a lot of fun. But like, that's an easy thing to recommend, you know? It's not going to take you more than an afternoon to beat it, but you'll want to spend a lot more than an afternoon with it. So, I don't know. For $9, support that kind of thing.
Yeah, just real quick before we go to break, Stufu in the chat room wants to know if you ever played Elevator Action Returns, or otherwise known as Elevator Action 2?
No. Right. Was it arcade only, or can you get it on a...
Hopefully he will answer that question.
Toy box or a PC?
I think I have. Is that the one with the three characters, the blonde guy, the red-haired girl, and the Arnold Schwarzenegger-looking guy in the end?
It'll take a minute for him to get that, because they're listening on a delay.
Maybe
so
we'll find out
if it is,
the break.
I've played that game. It is definitely more action than the original.
Yeah.
You know, the original, we were like shooting lights from the top to try to hit someone in the head as we're walking by trying to do that.
It was great. I mean, it was not like
this
one,
you're like throwing grenades down elevator shafts to blow up the entire level.
Right.
I mean,
it wasn't a more action. Like, it wasn't a good game, but it was a great game.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense at all.
It provided fun.
Whatever,
what,
I was 9
supposed to do,
or whatever, and it was great. So,
Well, we'll find out what other games you had played. You were able to get some gaming done, actually, this week. So, but we got more coming up next on In-Game Chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Music from Bionic Commando, Rearmed.
I'll play the other one.
Get closer to the...
I'll play the other one. That's why I didn't recognize it. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
The one that everyone hated, I liked. Go figure. Okay.
Well, welcome back to the show. We were in the... No, it's not Halo, Lavos, but you'll find out in a minute. But welcome back to the show. We're in the middle of talking about the games that James has played. One of the things that we have... we completely forget to mention this all the time. I'm going to be playing my Vita a lot on the plane ride tomorrow. I'm taking that with me. But Sony has mandated that all PS4 games must have Vita crossplay.
Right.
Which is an interesting thing. They're really trying to make that Vita, you know...
viable.
I suppose, but is it not? Maybe it's not to you, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, it's just handheld gaming is just... It's not something. I mean, my gaming is always on consoles. When I just haven't been involved in a handheld since that Game Boy Advance. I mean, I haven't thought it was relevant for a very long time.
Vita's a pretty nice system. The 3DS is a pretty nice system.
You got PS Plus?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Vita's a really good system.
I've seen plenty of games available on the Vita. Just I guess it's just the handheld thing is just I haven't been interested in it a very long time.
Well, all right. Now, if you think about. I mean, there is the idea of handheld gaming and just dragging along like your little handheld gaming device and playing it wherever it is you're supposed to be on, like on the bus or waiting in line or for a thing. I don't know. I don't ever do those things. I monkey around on my phone. Mm-hmm. But the remote play and the cross play stuff and all of that is, I can't help but be interested in that. I don't even know what it's going to be like, but I can't help but be interested in it. And if it's a mandated inclusion for everything on the PS4, then I have to imagine somebody's going to do something at least kind of interesting with it, right? Or at the very least, your Vita's not going to have absolutely nothing to do.
Right.
As if it didn't have something to do already if you're a PS Plus subscriber.
I was saying, now Navid has a point in the chat room where he says as long as they don't use the PSI. There's something that was involved with it. Like some games have to use the included PSI or something, and how to implement
that. It's worth noting that there's been some information to lead us to believe that the PSI isn't going to be a pack-in with the PS4. The camera, the little PSI camera, which the redesigned version of the one that was with the PS3, available before the PS3.
Where do you get that from?
There was a piece of information out of one of the original YouTube videos.
Okay, I know the one you're talking about.
You know the one I'm talking about.
And
that says that the PSI is not necessarily included, or that it is not included.
Well, it said that it was not. It said that the PSI sold or would be sold separately,
right,
something like that. But the video, as I understand it, and I could be wrong, the video was only talking about the new controller, the DualShock 4, which led me to think that, well, that makes sense. The PSI will not come packaged with the DualShock 4. I'm just trying to say that not necessarily. You're right, but
look, the DualShock controller can't do anything. It literally has no purpose in life and on Earth without the PS4. Correct?
Yes.
If you have a PS4 and the PSI is packed in with the PS4, then the DualShock 4 and the PS4 and the PSI are almost certainly together. So anything that indicates that the PSI isn't sold separately makes me think that it's sold separately. This would also jibe somewhat with the indications that the PS4 is actually going to be able to be sold fairly cheaply, right? The rumors about the build of materials and the guesses at the market price being somewhere around $400.
Right.
That's another thing that allows them to get a little bit lower if they're not packing in the PSI with every system. So, I don't know. It's all guesswork. Find out in 2 days. Doesn't really matter. I'm just going on what little bit I think that I know.
I understand.
Might not be anything.
I know. We'll find out. God, next week's episode is going to be just plan for 3 hours at least. Possibly more, but it's going to be a big one next week. Anyway, going back to your games that you played this weekend, or this past week, you feel free. You played two more games, Remember Me and State of Decay.
I'm finished them.
I understand, but we would love to know your impressions. Dennis is just practically giddy in the chat room over State of Decay.
What is that? It's just another thing. The two of the three things that I'm playing right now, I completely ignored until like 5 minutes ago. Had no idea about State of Decay. And if I had seen anything on it, even having played it, I probably would have disregarded it as one of the most vile-looking, kind of, I don't want to say tragic, but man, that game is ugly. That is a very ugly video game. It is, like, it's post-zombie apocalypse, third-person run-around, do action-y, smash zombie heads in kind of thing, right? Pick up a stick, smash a zombie with it. It's not slow. It's not Resident Evil slow or anything like that. It's open-world action survival thing. It's a little bit borrows, I guess, something from Dead Rising, right? Because it's about survival. A really, really, really heavy emphasis on survival, which is actually where it succeeds magically. But you do have to run around to do action-y stuff. There are, you don't have a lot of health. There are a lot of different people you got to try to save. You have to create little survival strongholds or enclaves or whatever, and you have to go. Different people have different objectives. You have to find supplies. Like, you really just have to go out and do that thing they're always doing in The Walking Dead show, but you never actually see them do, which is go to town for supplies or whatever. Mm. You have to rummage through houses. You have to make contact with other survivors. You have to try to find food and ammunition. You have to try to avoid the hordes of the zombies and stay alive and keep everyone else alive as well and prosper and do whatever else you do. I don't know. I've only spent about 2 hours with it. But it is... I mean, I'm not a... I don't completely have to have really good graphics for everything, but the game's kind of hideous, right? Here we are at the very end of a console generation, and it's... It could look better. It could honestly look better. It could even play a little bit better in terms of the action elements, but... It is a fair trade, because this game has it going on where it counts. It absolutely has it going on where it counts. If you've ever played some kind of survival horror in the traditional sense, like Resident Evil is something a little bit different. This is, in its own way, the zombie survival post-apocalyptic thing that you've always wanted. You have to dig down a little bit. You have to look past the layers of really wretched shadows and the... marginally, like that possibly unforgivable draw distance. The frame rate's not very good. The resolution doesn't look like it's very good. Jaggies and aliased textures all over the place. But it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. It does everything that it's supposed to do. That really great balance of having to be stealthy, but the stealth not particularly being all that powerful. Having to constantly fight for supplies and never really being on a safe footing. Having to deal with other personalities, having to make hard decisions about the things that belong to you and which of those things you're going to donate to any group you're with in order to gain favor, to gain influence, and have more control over what the group does together. It's balancing all these different things in a really excellent way. I would urge you to maybe go watch a video, except I don't think the videos do it any favors, because the videos are largely ugly things. And I'm not saying that that's the most important thing in the world, but it can be hard to get past that. But there is a demo available. It's got something probably like an hour or so, maybe 2 hours worth of gameplay in it, because it's once you get past a certain point, it becomes timed. And then you can, you know, have a little bit of time to go run around and do stuff. And I thought at one or two moments, this is all right. It's not really great, but... Yeah, whatever. You know, I'm at least getting my taste. By the time I was at the end, I was like, take my $20. You know, take my 1,600 points. Whatever. It's good. I don't want it to be there. I would rather play it on my PC, and I think maybe it's going to be on the PC later.
Seems to be with some of these Xbox Live Arcade exclusives.
It's one of those things where it's like, I know we're not, you know, buddies with Microsoft right now. I know this is an independent developer who's... If history is any indication, it's probably not having a really great time. Mm-hmm. They're not going to say that right now, but maybe they're not. But like, this thing is.
It did like
really
what was it?
It did more than a 250,000 sales in its first day and a half, 2 days, something like that. It was ridiculous. Second fastest selling XBLA game of all time, next to Minecraft, which already had heaps and gobs of mind share amongst people, and they were just happy to get it on this other thing, but. This little guy shows up, you know? It's plucky. It doesn't look great. It doesn't seem like kind of somber and dour the way that a normal zombie type game is. And it's very easy to ignore. There's lots and lots of zombie survival failure games out there. But
Naveed in the chat room wants to know, single player only or any co-op online?
No multiplayer capabilities whatsoever, at least not at the moment. It is entirely single player, which... You know, I know is a bit of a downer. I think it actually would be really fun if there was some co-op to it, but I think my suspicion is that they're able to keep some of the gameplay elements as tight as they are because they don't really have to consider the possible, you know, the ramifications of having other people playing with or against each other, for that matter. It's just the mechanics of negotiating your relationships with all these different people and... doing all this stuff. I mean, if I had like one other person out there with me, if it was like a two-player co-op thing, I think that would be pretty squiz. But whatever. It's great. I have a hard time saying it because it's so ugly. It's such an ugly video game, man. And it's like all like weird and I don't know. The zombies like get stuck on weird things, and I get stuck on weird things, and nothing interacts right with anything else. And
what made you pick it up then? Do you play the demo?
No, I played the demo.
You played the demo and got through it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Reaching back to the Last of Us demo that we played, right? Mm-hmm. I got no doubts. I got no doubts that I'm going to have me a time with the Last of Us. Mm-hmm. None at all. But I feel like that demo didn't do anything but just, hey, here's how it works. Here's how the walking around and the opening of doors and the making of med kits and the killing of zombie things, which aren't zombies, but they're zombies. Here's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
Go away. That's how I felt about that demo. And I didn't really like it very much, you know? This thing, though, is very much the opposite. This is the kind of demo that sells you on a video game. It gives you plenty of access to it, makes it very clear what kind of world you're walking around in. And it was just fun in that survivalist kind of way. If you want just straight action, something a little closer to what Resident Evil has become, it's not quite the game. But if you're looking for somebody that's somehow managed to tune all of those mechanics really perfectly and gives you that feeling that, like, no, I am really managing survival with a bunch of other people, and like I can't squander my resources, and the decisions I make matter a great deal, this is a thing, man. You know, this is good stuff. They should be rewarded for it. They did a good job here.
Yeah.
How's Remember Me?
I don't know. I can't. At any given moment, I either really like it or really hate it.
Yeah. That came in on Gamefly this week, and I was not going to have time to put any effort into it, and so I gave it to James, and I was like, here. Which, I can do that now, this generation. You know, rent a game, number one, soon. Give it to you, number two. To let him play it and give him something to do until hopefully Last of Us shows up on my door while I'm over in L.A., and then he can start playing that regardless. Friday, that's when that hits. So
I saw a little bit of that in action. It felt like a...
Remember Me.
It felt like a little bit of an Uncharted Tomb Raider looking thing. There was a section. No. I was watching someone play it. It was a section he was in. It felt like
that. I'm a little bit torn. I actually, again, watching the videos, watching reviews and reading reviews that I had, I expected to really not like the combat at all. Which, for whatever reason, for my taste, maybe I shouldn't. But it borrows an awful lot from the modern Batman mechanic, you know, trying to chain together combos and move smoothly from one thing to another. It's got its own twist on it. You can do an awful lot to customize your own combos.
Yeah, that's what he said. It felt like a derivative of Batman.
Yeah. And it is, in a way, and I actually think it works fairly well once you agree to its terms. Once you say that, okay, I understand. When I need to dodge, I need to dodge, right? And you're going, and I have to really work to maintain a combo on an individual enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Once I kind of relaxed and got over sort of my own, you know, what I wanted it to be, and just recognized it for what it is, I actually thought it was kind of fun, and I did enjoy it. I understand that it maybe repeats a bit too much over the course of the game, but I thought it was okay. The world is really, really, really great. It is a really neat piece of world building, a neat piece of projection, right? They're projecting the notion of Neo-Paris around you. I like it. It's very, it's a little bit like AI. It's a little bit Luc Besson and Fifth Element. Obviously, it's a French game. It mm-hmm. is extraordinarily French. And all of the dialogue weirdness is there in spades. It's awkward. It doesn't make a lot of sense. The character development hasn't been particularly good so far. And I don't enjoy that part of it. I most don't enjoy the fact that I want desperately to leap over every barrier. I want to crawl up every ledge. I want to shimmy down every drop-off and look at every piece of the city, and it's inviting, right? There's something about the design that makes me feel like I should be able to do that. I always want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who listens to this or knows me personally knows that that's all I ever want. I am, more than any other type of gamer, an explorer. And I can be okay with not being able to do that. I don't mind being confined to a linear game. If I feel like all the cues are right, if all the guidance and the pressure is in the right places, I can get over invisible walls. But this game, it eats me alive because it is such a narrow path through a city that looks otherwise like I really should be able to move in any direction. But you know, this ledge and this ledge look exactly the same, but only this ledge is the one that leads to the next point in the story. So I just can't even jump on this one. And there's no difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
It says an awful lot about how really fantastic the world design is, but what a poor fit it is for something that is so completely constrained. So I enjoy being in this world. I'm just really stymied by, you know, what a tight leash I'm on. I don't like it. It's a
frustration to me.
This
big world, I kind of goes in one place.
Second time I've referenced FF7 tonight. It reminds me for all the world of being in Midgar in Final Fantasy VII. This amazing, this lush, this brilliantly realized city, but you will only ever be able to click on a certain hotspot and you will only be able to walk along a certain path. And I have been desperate in my soul since 1997 to fully explore Midgar in FF7. That's a whole game set there, like, and just giving me free reign in that city would be gorgeous. And those kind of things stick with me. And the Neo Paris of this game will stick with me. That aside, though, the memory remix mechanic is great.
I saw that demo.
Man.
I saw it in the game trailer's review.
Yeah, I saw it in the review, and I thought, this might be kind of interesting. But then I did my first one, and I was like, dude, a whole game of this, please. Right? No combat. Nope. Platforming. I just walk from person to person and do this to them. I don't even care what the context is. Not really. It was really, really neat and fun. It wasn't terribly complex, but it's such a great, like, you watch a little scene and you get to a critical point in it and you have a goal because you want the person you're interacting with to do something completely different. So you have to convince them by manipulating their memory, a key memory, that something entirely different happened. So you rewind it just like a scene in a film, and key things in that memory pop up, and because of the nature of who and what your character is, she can manipulate those things. So you're essentially tricking the person, you know, who you got your fingers dug into believing something different by changing key elements, and then their brain logically makes some other, I don't know, whatever. It's great. Like, it's really, really great. I'm pretty sure there won't be nearly enough of it in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a shame. It's exceptionally cool. You know, I feel like if the platforming and the movement was more fluid, a little more predictable, a little more fun, a little less frustrating, then the whole package would be great. The localization, I guess, or whatever, could stand to be cleaned up somewhat. I know we throw the word polish around a bit too much, but
right.
That would be there. I feel like in a game where it's all about being able to manipulate memory and the trustworthiness of your memory, when I die, all I get is a loading screen and I pop back up at another thing. Like, that's a missed opportunity. Like, at least give me some sort of contextual, you know, I don't know. Like,
I understand what you're saying.
Smoke and mirrors. At least pull some Prince of Persia.
Right.
At a time.
Exactly.
Something like that. You know, at least give me some gimmick. And Remember Me had some issues getting to market. You know, had some issues finding a publisher and making its way. So you could probably say that it suffered a lot of the same types of things that Last Light did, right? Kind of an arduous final several months of development where maybe certain things just didn't. They weren't going to make it in, you know. Certain key elements of the polish weren't going to make it in. I haven't played nearly enough of it to make a final decision. There's no way, though. There's no way I could say that this is worth your money.
Right, right.
Not right now. This is not worth full retail price to me. But I already feel like I wouldn't want to have missed it.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense whatsoever.
No, I understand.
As frustrating as certain parts of it can be, I feel like nothing else is doing quite what this game is doing. And there's a part of me that always feels compelled to reward that. Just you're doing something different. And even though it's sort of a hot mess, like, you deserve some money.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend it to anybody who thinks they can like any of those elements, or at least like some of them and dismiss the others.
well. We got a few minutes left. E3, what are you guys on Monday? You're doing the whole rundown, right? You're going to be...
It's going to be a single extravaganza, probably barfing all over Twitter about, my God, did you just see what whoever said about whatever? You know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I will be at most of these. My Monday is Microsoft, EA. I do not have an invite to Ubisoft's, but after that, it's over to Sony. So that's what Monday will look like. I'll let you guys do the tweeting, unless something interesting happens at the at any one of these events, and I'll jump in if
everyone with a Twitter account mm-hmm. who cares one bit for video games will be tweeting. It's fine.
Yeah.
No one's individual tweets will be missed.
So yeah. Anyway, watch it's Sony's. I really want you to watch Sony's. I can't tell you why.
You don't even know why.
I can't tell you why I want you to watch Sony's. I can tell you.
He doesn't know why. Don't,
exactly.
Don't let him act like it's some secret that he has. It's some secret someone else has.
It is.
He has no clue what's
up. And it involves me, but I don't know how it involves me or what it means. I don't know, but watch Sony's. And then whatever. I've got interviews with, I've got a look at Square Enix. I got Saints Row 4. What else do I have? Twisted Pixel. Focus Entertainment, Witcher 3, meeting with NVIDIA, Bethesda, Activision, Konami, Mono Price. I did get that set up.
Yeah, nice.
Astro,
I'm sure they'll be giving away IPS panels.
Right, exactly. Astro Gaming, Namco, Disney, and 505 Games. Lots of stuff. And then the best
parts.
And
then the show floor.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The show floor, lots of parts where... things just kind of happen off the cuff. You go by and you're like, hey, do you have 30 minutes I can look at such and such? Yeah, come on in. And, you know, those things happen, which are great. So.
I want you to pretend like I'm there with you. Okay?
Imagine, I really wish you were.
No, but you're going to have to pretend. Imagine I'm there with you and imagine the kinds of fun I will make of you, or I would if I were there.
Right.
If you do what you did with the Star Wars Kinect game again.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
I like it.
I want you to take at least one critical eye with you. I don't care how tired you are. I don't care. You're someone else's eyes and ears.
I know.
So, and it's your only opportunity to do it. You got several days, but be good.
If you got time for it, Naveed wants one big E3 prediction from each of you to close the show. Gosh, I have no idea. I don't know. We'll get prices.
For everybody?
No.
I think a decent prediction will be that we'll get a price from Sony, but not from Microsoft.
Hmm. RJ, you got anything over there?
No. Not really. unless you want to think about that new, the rumor about Sega getting back in the console market with the Dreamcast. I don't know.
Man, that isn't even happening.
I know.
That is absolutely, you're going to have to keep dreaming because that's the only way you're going to get Sega back in the console market.
I don't know. Maybe they'll surprise me.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in the chat room, as well as everybody listening on the stream or even on the radio here, as well as thanks to everyone who grabs us every week from iTunes or however you get our show for later use. Really appreciate it. Don't forget, join us on Twitter, Facebook, our forums at colonyofgamers.com. And if you're on Steam, we've got a Steam group you can join up with over there and play games with us and other listeners. Plus, check out our Minecraft server at play.ingamechat.net. play.ingamechat.net. I want to thank everybody for listening. We will see you next Saturday for a very gigantic episode to go over everything that happened at E3. Lots of stuff. So enjoy the week. It's our big week for us. So enjoy it. And then the end of the week, it's us. It's Last of Us. It's lots of fun. So we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.